Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis to wrap up the work week for you as usual. And, of course, we start with the good. Jim takes us down to Florida, our favorite Republican-turned-independent-turned-Democratic politician, former Florida Governor Charlie Crist, who wants that job back, this time as a Democrat. But according to this piece by the political editor of the Tampa Bay Times, Adam Smith, it looks like the Charlie Crist campaign, which has already been announced, is not exactly off to a rip-roaring start. He says there is no real Crist campaign for governor. Crist campaign headquarters? Coming soon. Campaign manager? Coming soon. Halfway decent website? Coming soon. Press operation? Coming soon. Grassroots organizing? Who knows? Weekly announcements of Florida county leadership teams? Dream on. Off to a terrible start for Charlie Crist and the Florida Democrats, which can only mean conservatives are smiling and hope that this turns into a debacle the entire year.
Yes, this is undoubtedly what you want to see if you're a Republican in Florida. I actually spoke to some who are kind of watching this race closely, and they're cheering this news. They don't have any illusions, though, particularly about the governor's race, that Rick Scott has poll numbers that have never been that great. Basically, he had a hard-fought primary against Bill McCollum back in 2010. Managed to win the general election, but that was like, you know, lots of negative campaigning in the primary, lots of negative campaigning in the general. He enters office with at best a 50-50 approval-disapproval rate, and it's basically been a long, hard slog from there. Even though, as I noted in the Jolt the other day, things in Florida have gotten gotten a lot better, particularly in the job market over the last 3 years and change. Of Crist not having an apparatus, what this reflects is that ultimately, this is a guy without a party. Yes, technically he's a Democrat now. It's expected that most state Democrats will fall in line. He will have a healthy fundraising support network. He's got remember the law firm that he did those ads for?
Yes.
Well, that law firm is apparently like one of the biggest in the state. It's got like 600 lawyers. He has his network of financial supporters. What he doesn't have is a big system of grassroots loyalists. And the expectation is that eventually Democrats will fall in line on this. But you think about it, I mean, they spent most of the past decade trying to beat Charlie Crist back when he was a Republican. As I mentioned yesterday, really the message of the Charlie Crist campaign so far is, I really want to be governor. Remember me? I once was your governor, and then I flipped parties. Now I really, really want to be your governor. He's saying he's a liberal Democrat on a bunch of issues. You know, most liberal Democrats in Florida are going to be at least a little wary of this Johnny-come-lately. Obviously, Republicans can't stand him, and I think most people, you know, I'm told that his campaign skills have always been pretty darn good, that he can work a room and work a crowd. We look at him and see this greasy infomercial salesman type persona from the law firm ad, but apparently it plays well in Florida. He will end up probably having a coherent campaign coalesce around him. But the longer it takes him to do that, the better it is for Rick Scott. Obviously, Charlie Crist may be kind of overhyped by the D.C. Media looking down at Florida.
Could be. But Jim, you and I both live in Virginia. So when we kind of giggle at the idea of a guy who's got naked political ambitions, isn't really ready for the job, it doesn't mean you can't win.
Yeah, you know, Terry McAuliffe might give him some pointers.
All right, on to martini number two now. And one of the nice touches in association with the March for Life this week was that the RNC delayed its winter meeting here in Washington so that its members, including the chairman, Reince Priebus, could take part in the March for Life. And they got a lot of plaudits for that, and deservedly so, especially on a frigid day. But then the meetings took place later this week, as I think they're still going on as we speak. And one of the speakers yesterday was a former Arkansas governor and now Fox News personality, Mike Huckabee, who is rumored by many to be seriously considering a 2016 presidential bid. And he talked about how disgusting it was that the Democrats were putting together this war on women and basically treating women in a way that they needed the government to do everything for them, kind of the Life of Julius situation. But in the middle, he made some comments that, are getting him in a little bit of trouble and have Republicans on the defensive a little bit. Here's the full context.
Women I know are smart, educated, intelligent, capable of doing anything that anyone else can do. Our party stands for the recognition of the equality of women and the capacity of women. That's not a war on them. It's a war for them. And if the Democrats want to insult the women of America by making them believe that they are helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in and providing for them a prescription each month for birth control because they cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government, then so be it. Let us take that discussion all across America, because women are far more than the Democrats have played them to be. And women across America need to stand up and say, enough of that nonsense.
Jim, that was about a 45-second cut. I would think most conservatives would say 35 seconds of that was fabulous. But once you start talking about libidos, you know that that's all the mainstream media is going to go after. And he probably should have phrased it a tad differently.
I just don't want to hear the word libido coming out of Mike Huckabee's mouth. You see that, and you're like, well, okay, that's him saying this is the way the Democrats characterize women. That's how they think of women, and that's how they tailor their advertising towards them. Typically, and really, you know, all that unsurprisingly, I believe it was a reporter for MSNBC who initially said that Huckabee had called women as unable to control, you know, what he was attributing to the Democrats, MSNBC attributed to Huckabee. And then they corrected it, but of course, you know, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can get its boots on. There's two problems here. The first is that I'm not so sure it does us that much good to complain about Democratic advertising, unless you find a way to break through to that target audience. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know that basically Huckabee is saying Democrat ads towards women insult them, but the women who are seeing these ads don't feel insulted, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't be voting for Democrats. So there's that. And then secondly, his description there, can't control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government. Being Huckabee and looking like Mike Huckabee, and you know, somebody once joked that the moment you have a Southern accent, people in the North take 10 points off your IQ. They just assume that you're dumber because you're from the South. It's a vicious, mean, unfair stereotype. But being a former Baptist minister, people are going to see, look at Huckabee and say, aha, he's one of those crazy religious right guys who wants to control women, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody once said to me, if you want to break an image about yourself, you have to do something that's very, very surprising and the exact opposite. And to cite something else from today's Morning Joel, there's a great example. Did you see who spoke at Davos yesterday, Greg? Rick Perry. Davos is this very, you know, hoity-toity get-together in Switzerland of you know, economic and professorial elites. And you know what he was talking about? Legalization of marijuana and how he's on, how he thinks, you know, states should be left up to states, and he's got no problem with Colorado going forward with this. So there's that approach to say, I'm completely breaking what people think of me. Now you can decide whether you think that's a good idea or a bad idea. Huckabee, in the process of arguing against the Democratic depiction of women and their way of thinking of women and their way of promoting their policies to women, managed to come across in a way that certainly that basically the Democrats laid out the snare and Huckabee stepped in it. And it's unfair. It's unfortunate. Not enough people are putting out the entire statement. You know, that sentence, as they saw in the case of it was Casey Hunt of MSNBC who put out the quote that was just flat out wrong. Basically, you know, with lots of, you know, ellipses and stuff like that, attributing a viewpoint to Huckabee that he explicitly denounced in that speech there. If you're Huckabee, you just got to know this is what's going to happen, which means you got to word what you're saying in ways that nobody can possibly misconstrue it. It just kind of feels like this is a very familiar tune we've heard played. And you kind of wish Huckabee could, you know, figure out a way to say Democrats talk to women like they're stupid and not have it come across as he's the one who's making the argument that he's attributing to Democrats.
Yes. Phraseology is important. Anyway, on to the crazy martini today. And earlier this morning, the McDonald's were arraigned in federal court in Richmond. They pled not guilty. They were released on their own recognizance, and now they'll prepare for their trial, a 14-count indictment on conspiracy and fraud and corruption and all sorts of other things. But here's the kicker that we learned this morning, thanks to the Washington Post. Maureen McDonald relayed to federal prosecutors last summer that she felt responsible for the relationship with a wealthy businessman who had drawn legal scrutiny to Virginia's First Family, and her attorney asked whether the case could be resolved without charges for her husband. But prosecutors showed no interest, according to people familiar with the conversation. Instead, months later, authorities proposed that then-Governor Robert F. McDonald plead guilty to one felony fraud charge that had nothing to do with corruption in office, and his wife would avoid charges altogether. The governor rejected the offer, the people with knowledge of the conversation said. So, Jim, obviously we'll see how the trial goes. They might get off entirely here, but based on the legal analysis we're hearing over the past few days, that doesn't seem overly likely. And the fact now that we learn that they rejected what was a pretty generous plea deal could make them really regret it if this trial doesn't go their way.
Easy for us to say because we're not in Bob McDonald's shoes. However, the first thing is that right now, as he's going forward with this legal case, his defense is, no matter what you think of all the gifts I took from this guy, nothing I did rises to the level of corruption. The government indictment lays out lots of examples in which McDonald was touting this company and its products to his cabinet and having meetings with them, and they had their corporate event in the governor's mansion, and all kinds of things that, whether or not it meets the statutory definition of corruption, certainly emits a bad odor to us. And you got to wonder, what's a jury going to think? Are they going to say, this is just Bob McDonald being a nice guy to somebody and somebody being a nice guy to him? Or whether they'll say, look, governors aren't supposed to suddenly turn into corporate shills. He seemed very confident about his odds in front of a jury. It's intriguing that Maureen McDonald said she wanted to seek out a plea because she felt more responsible. And certainly the indictment, the story that is told there, certainly makes Maureen McDonald look like the one who was driving these financial arrangements with Johnny Williams. And if you were Bob McDonald, and let's say, you find yourself in this mess, you take that deal. You're pleading guilty to a felony. That's a very big deal. Theoretically, I think it's like 2 years in prison. I don't think a governor would end up getting 2 years in prison, but you put yourself in a certain amount of jeopardy of jail time or massive fines or who knows what else. On the other hand, you can always kind of pitch this when you are finally released and are talking about this in the public to say, I took the deal to spare my wife. And all of a sudden, that makes him looking a little bit more noble. It makes him look a little bit more like a guy who's put his family first and was willing to fall on his sword in order to spare the woman he loves suffering of her own. And given a choice, that seems like one that might be easier or more palatable in the long term. But just one other thing, my buddy Cam had said to me yesterday when discussing the McDonald's, and I just want to run it by you, Greg. Greg, what does a governor do after they leave the governorship in Virginia?
Well, they either try to run for another office or they get some cushy political strategist / lobbying gig.
Yeah, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine are both currently U.S. senators. But, when most people leave either Congress or the governorship, they teach a class at a college, they write a memoir that nobody ever reads, but usually gets you a good, five-figure, six-figure advance. They end up heading up some business group, serving on some corporate board. Once you leave office as a statewide elected official, you're doing okay. You're probably going to make six figures a year for the rest of your life. You give some paid speeches, and all that kind of stuff. And Virginia has really no limits on what, it's not like certain members of Congress aren't allowed to take paid lobbying positions for a certain amount of time after they leave office. Well, Bob McDonald, starting now, would have all kinds of opportunities to make lots and lots of money. So no matter how dire the financial straits were for the McDonald's when they took office in 2009, and I'm told that obviously part of their problem was that they lost a lot of money when the real estate market collapsed, just like lots of other people, better days were ahead. But they couldn't wait. They needed the Rolex now. They needed the Oscar de la Renta dresses now. They needed all that stuff now. And it's such a tragic tale because this was so avoidable that if they had just been a little more patient. So in light of all that, Bob McDonald seems awfully confident about his odds of running that jury. I guess time will tell, Greg.
I guess so. On that ridiculously depressing note, we'll call it for the week. And Jim, we'll talk to you on Monday.
Better days next week, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.